I mean, you don't have to be a parent for more than 5 minutes to realize it is the most guilt-ridden, shaming role on the planet. And I'm just like, we were overwhelmed about all the advice coming in at us. And I went into the research and said, when I'm on my rocking chair in my grandparenting years and I'm looking back on the years that I have raised my kids, what will be the single greatest thing that will have really mattered in raising my kids?
You are listening to the Famous at Home podcast with Dr. Josh and Christy Straub.
Because when it's all said and done, we all want to know that we were famous at home.
Welcome back to the Famous at Home podcast. Today we are talking about a brand new series called Words That Matter for Your Family. And the first word today is safety. Before we jump in, here is a word from our sponsors. So today we're talking about a brand new series called Words That Matter for Your Family. And I think, you know, we prayed through this, we thought through this really hard about over the last number of months, just kind of like what really matters when it comes to family. And last week we talked about the household. We talked about rethinking the household and what does it mean for how you're leading your household. This week we are starting this series, and safety is the core. Like if you have a hub of a wheel at Famous at Home, everything we've talked about through the years, from the books we've written on the children's books, what am I feeling? What do I do with worry? What do I do with anger? Famous at Home, the book Famous at Home, that book. And then it all started with emotional safety as the core, the crux. And I wrote a book in 2015 called How Emotional Safety is the Key to Raising Kids Who Live, Love, and Lead Well. And in this book, it's all about emotional safety. It is the hub of the wheel of everything that we do at Famous at Home. The connectedness, the ability to really make your house be a safe place. And the reason that we started with this whole idea of safety, even for this series, and the reason it's kind of the core of everything that we talk about, is because when we first started looking at this, we realized it was the single biggest factor that led to every major outcome that we desire in our kids. And so we'll talk a little bit about that research today. We'll also talk a little bit about how it applies to our marriage and how it applies to how we relate to one another. But this whole idea of safety is just, it is the foundation of every other word that we are going to talk about in this series.
But I think what's interesting, probably a lot of people listening, you hear the word safety. Like emotional safety is not a concept you've maybe even heard of. So safety to you is like physical safety, right? All the things we do to keep ourselves, our children safe, right? Like car seats and all the things. But this is so much deeper than that. And yet we talked about last week, like it still encompasses everything that genuinely makes us feel safe. So emotional safety, like I think let's talk about what it is, first of all, because for a lot of people, they've never even heard that term. And yet, as soon as you hear it, what it is, you will realize when you've experienced it, and maybe even more so when you haven't or when you don't feel it.
And I think part of the doing that, though, is going back to our story and how we started, where the word safety came from to begin with, where the word emotional safety came from to begin with, because we were in the early years of parenting. So I have a PhD in counseling, did my doctoral research in the area of attachment relationships. And I remember having worked with juvenile delinquents and troubled families for many, many years in my counseling experience and that type of thing, talking about this area and of attachment and connection and that type of thing in the home. And then all of a sudden I get married. Not all of a sudden, it took me a while to get married actually, but and even a while to get engaged as well, according to Christy and
like our whole family. But anyway, that's another story.
Anyway,
another day.
we get married and we think we're doing pretty well. You know, I was 30 by the time we got married. Christy's 26. We have these, you know, patterns that we're setting in our relationship that are healthy and I think feel like you're doing well. And then all of a sudden our greatest opponent came into our marriage weighing 8 pounds and 1 ounce. And then we had Kennedy, our second born, and it just compounded the trouble for us compounded one on the other from you can tell these stories from your pregnancy to your, to the colic,
acid
reflux, whatever all that stuff is.
Yeah. All of those early years were, I call it when I hit the bottom rung of life, because it really was the bottom rung. And I realized I had become a version of myself that was the worst version of me that I've ever been. I was short.
It was the worst version of you that I had ever known.
Thank you for that validation. But it was, I didn't even recognize myself anymore. Like I didn't know where I went. Like where did
I didn't recognize yourself either.
I didn't know where Christy went. And I remember one day I think Kennedy was, 4 months old. Landon was 2. I had really difficult pregnancies. I had that hypermesis gravidum, if you've heard of that, where it's just basically extreme morning sickness. So I'd throw up like 30 plus times a day for 7 months for the first 2 pregnancies. And I was just hopeless. I wouldn't have told you at the time, but looking back, like I was depressed. And I was really struggling. And then when both of the kids were born, I remember Landon, he just cried a lot. And I remember a friend saying to me, like, Christy, I promise you, like, this experience that you've had with Landon, like, it's not normal. Like, this isn't a normal infant baby experience. Like, basically saying, like, it's only going to get better. So we got pregnant with Kennedy, and I went through the same pregnancy basically again on repeat, but with a toddler. And when she was born, she was actually worse. And we went to every specialist, every doctor, every chiropractor, naturopath, everyone, to try to figure out what was wrong. Because where we lived at the time, Josh was on staff at a church in Missouri. And I just remember being known as the people with the babies with the worst cry they'd ever heard. And that was like how we were known around town, was like, oh, those poor people with the babies with the worst cry you've ever heard. And it was like, it would sound like you had dropped her on the floor. She would scream. I mean, she didn't even really.
We still have post-traumatic stress from that. Like legit post-traumatic stress from hearing a baby scream and cry like that.
Yeah.
We're
working on healing
the limbic
that,
system,
but yeah,
like our limbic system that's messed up. So we're in those early years and we're struggling, like we're hitting those early years and thinking that it's funny how God humbles you in the very thing he calls you to. So you don't pull your britches up too high thinking you have it all together. But, you know, I remember looking at the research during that time going, okay, I know parenting is not easy. I know it's difficult, but could it be simpler? Every expert has something. You know, you can't leave the hospital before you have to make a decision about whether or not you're going to immunize your child. And we all know what that debate's like today. You get them home and now all of a sudden you have to make a decision about, do we co-sleep or not co-sleep? Do we breastfeed or do we bottle feed? Do we spank or do we not spank? Do we do timeouts or do we do time-ins? Because parenting experts today say that time-ins are better, right? And I didn't even get into BPA-free products, gluten-free diets, baby safety gates. I mean, you don't have to be a parent for more than 5 minutes to realize it is the most guilt-ridden, shaming role on the planet. And I'm just like, we were overwhelmed about all the advice coming in at us. And I went into the research and said, when I'm on my rocking chair in my grandparenting years and I'm looking back on the years that I have raised my kids, what will be the single greatest thing that will have really mattered in raising my kids? And every research study that I looked at pointed back to this idea of emotional safety. And in the book Safe House, I mean, if you looked at the notes section in the back of the book, I just cite every research. I mean, the notes section is as long as the book. I mean, it's like I cite every research study to show like this is the core of what we're looking for. Even Vern Bengston, a researcher out of University of Southern California, he's since passed, but he did a 55-year longitudinal study following families for 55 years to find the number one factor for faith transmission across the generations. The number one factor for faith transmission for you to pass your faith on to your kids. Yeah. And he found that the single greatest denominator was relational warmth, particularly from a father figure. And I think that when you look at all this data, one of the main reasons that emotional safety is so powerful is because our kids are living in their, when they live in their limbic system, what ends up happening, they're in their fight, flight, or freeze response. So when they're anxious, they're overwhelmed, they don't know what they're going to get in relationship, or they're frantic. You know, maybe someone's just picked on them. Maybe they fell and skinned their knee. Maybe they wrecked their bike. Whatever it is, maybe they're studying for a test and they don't know how to, you know, they're really nervous about it. Our ability to be able to enter into our kids' world and help them calm their brain triggers the prefrontal cortex, which is the higher functioning parts of the brain. And there, that's the part of the brain responsible for thinking straight. It's responsible for emotion regulation, cognitive flexibility, social skills, problem solving, and self-control. And that part of the brain shuts down when we're anxious and overwhelmed. And when our kids are living in that overwhelmed fight, flight, or freeze response, what happens is it shuts the part of the brain down that allows us to think. So the brain grows from the bottom to the top. That top part of the brain actually doesn't really develop until about the age of 25, which is why rental car companies are smarter than politicians, because you have to be 25 to rent a car and 16 to drive one. But then also, too, the other powerful part of this is that our brains grow from the right to the left. The right side of the brain is the here and now experiential part of the brain. The left side is the linguistic side of the brain. That's the where we put language to what it is we're experiencing. And I like to call the middle part of the brain the corpus. It's the corpus callosum. I like to call it the binding of the book. Because what it is it's our ability to be able to write our story by putting words to what we're experiencing in the here and now. We put words to our experiences. And what we do is we integrate our brains in such a way that it calms our experiences, it puts meaning to our experiences, and then that, therefore, that calming of the brain is what leads to every major outcome that we desire in our kids, from them getting good grades, from them having a faith that sticks, from them getting married, staying married, and having high marital satisfaction, actually enjoying their marriage, to having a career that they love, to having friends, meaningful relationships with friends in adulthood. All of these things that we desire for our kids are linked to this thing of emotional safety because of all of these factors. After the break, I want to share with you a little bit as well the biblical basis for this, because I think it's a beautiful component. So the biblical basis for this, and I think Paul here is a, you know, understands the brain chemistry. He understands the neuroscience behind the brain works. But in Philippians 4, he says this. He says, be anxious for nothing, but by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving. And by the way, thanksgiving actually, neuroscience research shows that gratitude pushes anxiety out of the brain. So when we give thanks to God, we push that anxiousness away. With thanksgiving, make your requests known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will keep your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. It's not until that point that Paul writes this. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is pure, excellent, anything praiseworthy, he says, think on these things. I think Paul understood that when we're anxious and overwhelmed, we can't think straight. And therefore, what we need is our ability to be in gratitude, verbalize our requests and our prayers to God, and then he gives us a peace that calms our brain so that we can think straight and think on things that are pure and true and lovely and holy. And I genuinely believe that in a finite way, we as parents were put here on earth to be that safety for our kids, so that when they are emotionally overwhelmed, our ability to be able to enter into their world has a calming effect on their brain to get them to think straight, and that's what leads to every major outcome that we desire in our kids. That's the basis of Safe House, how emotional safety is the key to raising kids who live, love, and lead well. It's the basis to everything that we talk about. It's the hub of the wheel, if you will. If everything at Famous at Home is a wheel, it is the hub of the wheel, and all these other things will be spokes, but the hub of the wheel is this whole idea of emotional safety, because it is what propels us to be able to serve others, love others, and to be our true selves in the world around us.
So good. I'm going to ask you a question. So if someone was in concise form, they're walking away, I want to understand what emotional safety is, how would you define it?
So I think there's I think I'm going to define it with a phrase, and then I'm going to show what it looks like.
Okay.
So the phrase that I would say that emotional safety is it says in 1 John chapter 4, perfect love casts out fear. And so often what ends up happening is a home that is riddled in fear. And by the way, you can be riddled in fear and not realize it. Mm-hmm. The fear of your children turning out a certain way, like your own parental agendas are fear-based. Fear of your child being too shy, not smart enough, not athletic enough, whatever it is for you, that we push our kids into activities. Those parental fears lead to anxiousness that gets trickle-down effect onto our kids. So I genuinely believe that emotional safety, a safe relationship, is love minus fear equals a safe relationship. So the more that we can experience love in that context, and therefore the way that I describe it then, what it looks like is that it's the posture from which we parent more than the techniques that matters most. So it's the posture that we put off more than the techniques. Because the reality is techniques, one technique, one parenting technique that works today on one child might not work on another child. And one parenting technique today that worked on that child will not work tomorrow on that child. Techniques come and go. The posture from which we parent, whether our kids are 2, 12, 22, 32, 42, or 52, the posture from which we should relate to them as a parent should not change. And that's what emotional safety is all about. Now, that's just in the context of parenting. That's where this really came about. I think it's also important that we talk about it in the context of the marriage. Because as research shows, parenting research shows this, that who we are, who we're becoming, mm-hmm. is the single greatest factor for, I mean, you can sum up all of parenting research into one primary conclusion, and that's that our kids become who we are. One research study actually shows that one of the greatest parenting strategies on the planet is a parent's relationship with their spouse. How you treat your spouse in a marriage situation, how you treat a co-parent in a divorce situation. That's one of the top three parenting strategies according to one research study, which we can link in the show notes. So how you treat your spouse. So even that marital relationship and the emotional safety in the context of that relationship is absolutely huge. So I think let's do it this way in terms of the podcast. Let's talk a little bit about emotional safety from the parenting side here to start, and then we'll conclude it with what does emotional safety look like in the context of marriage. And we can talk about it in our marriage. We can talk about how we do that in the second part. But I think, you know, for us, what emotional safety really looks like is, and this is where the children's books come out of, this is where What Am I Feeling comes out of, which I think would be important to talk about.
Yeah.
But just some of the very practical ways that you can start to implement safety in the context of your family.
Yeah. And I think, to know what that feeling feels like, I just want to, it's actually something you experience in your physical body. So like the nervous system is built to detect threats, right? So when he's talking about the limbic system, that fight, flight, freeze response, that kicks in when it feels unsafe. So that doesn't, that's why I said, it doesn't just mean physical safety, though it does, because if you feel physically unsafe, that is going to go off. But think about it, if you feel like you're unable to be yourself, that you have to, that feeling of having to walk on eggshells, the feeling of, like Josh mentioned, like not sure what you're going to get with a certain person. And maybe that for you is like with a parent. So maybe you grew up in a home that you're kind of looking at now and just like, maybe that really wasn't emotionally safe, where you just felt this underlying either desire to get out, to that freeze or fawn response where you just had to either play small or you were just kind of frozen. And maybe you had to even like dissociate to just survive. Or you needed to fight. Like you needed to fight to have your voice heard. You needed to fight for, you know, to be loved, to have attention, to have you attended to. All of that would speak to a place that maybe he just wasn't totally safe. And please hear, like, there is no perfect place ever. There's no perfect relationship. But what we're working on building is emotional safety. And one of the ways to do that is probably one of the greatest ways is they call repair. And repair is really called forgiveness. And the Bible asks us to use it a lot and to ask for it a lot. And so one of the, I think, most helpful things for me as a parent is to recognize I am going to mess this up. I am not always going to be emotionally safe for my kids. I am going to punish their emotions. I'm going to dismiss their emotions. I'm going to belittle or minimize their emotions. And all of those things are ways that we were probably responded to, or even the ways we handle our own emotion, where I make it smaller than it is. And it's like, oh, it's not a big deal. Or you actually punish it. And that's a response where you almost get into that fight where you're like, you will not, you know, be this way with me. And this isn't talking about misbehavior. It's talking about emotion, like where someone can be themselves and you're not coming down on them, correcting them, and like, or again, minimizing, belittling who they are and how they're presenting themselves in the world. And so I have just found this concept of forgiveness to be the most freeing thing, because I know that I mess up. I know I will always. I know that I'm working at and my own healing. That's why who we're becoming matters so much, because my own healing is healing how I am interacting with my husband, with my kids. And I really do believe like I'm doing better. But when I mess up, it's having that humble posture of saying, I am so sorry, and being specific about the offense and asking them to forgive me, and to say like, this models for my kids what happens when they mess up, because they're going to. It shows them how to ask for forgiveness and how to fix it, because we all need to know what that looks like. And a lot of us weren't apologized to as kids. It was this authoritarian, like, I am the parent and you are the child and I am right and you are wrong. And maybe just never an admission of guilt or fault. And that alone, if you think back, like if you even today as an adult, if your parent came to you today and after a lifetime of never righting their wrongs and said, I just wanted to apologize to you for how I treated you, how I behaved, how I responded to you, whatever that was, with a specific thing. Like, think about how healing that would be for you, even now as an adult, like maybe decades later. That's the power of forgiveness, and that's the power of fixing it. I can imagine how much power that has then in the moment if you actually stop. I'm so sorry I responded to you that way. And just the power of that repair is just beyond.
And I think what's important about that too is you're actually wiring your kid. Like, I remember when I wrote Safe House and Christy said to me, she said basically, and it's kind of, I think it's even on the back cover, front cover of the book somewhere, but she said, basically what you're telling me is that parenting isn't rocket science. It's just brain surgery. And I'm like, yeah, pretty much. Like how we relate to our kids, we are a part of wiring their brain for relationships. And you know, so what ends up happening is, you know, as Christy was talking, like if we are to approach our kids and we are to simply say, I'm the parent, you know, you're going to listen, you know, so many of us will raise an authoritarian home. It's like we weren't apologized to as kids, right? You know, today, what you're doing when you do that, there's a couple different ways to parent. Like there's the, I told you so way. There's that authoritarian, like you're going to do so because I'm the parent and I said so type of parenting. Mm-hmm. There's also the a permissive, like, well, you're going to do it anyway, so just go do it type of parenting. And those two ways of parenting are, I mean, there's times you want to use those. Like if your kids are in danger, you've got to be like, no, I'm the parent. I said so, like you're doing this. And there's also times that you just want to drop the concern and be like, you know what? This is not a hill worth dying on. Just do it. But neither, if those are our default ways of parenting, neither of those engages our child's brain. They're both one-way relationship. We're not engaging them in any type of conversation. So if that's your default, we're not wiring our children's brain for relationships, how to problem solve, how to regulate emotion, how to have social skills, how to have self-control. And so what we want to do is we want to be able to enter into their world. And we want to be able, especially if we mess up, to apologize. John Gottman's research found that if you just get this emotional safety thing, this emotion, what he describes as emotion coaching, if you get it right just 2 out of 5 times, you can still get the outcomes your desire in your kids. Listen, 40% of the time is, you know, Shaq shot better than 40% from the free throw line. Like, that's a pretty big deal. Like, you're going to mess up, as Christy was saying. And that word repair, that forgiveness, is the key. It is the ultimate of relationships, is what the research says. And but it's also engaging your child's brain. It's engaging their ability to be able to enter in and have relationship mm-hmm. and wrestle through a conflict, to be able to problem solve about a situation, whether they want to stay up later than curfew, whether they want to, you know, stay out later than curfew, whether they, you know, your teenagers, whether your own kids want some candy, whether they want to watch a movie, like it, whatever it is that they're wrestling with or they want to do, and you as a parent are kind of putting your foot down, enter into their world and find out the motivation behind what it is that they want to do. And that's entering, that's the posturing. You know, I remember this one story that I wrote. This was a number of years ago, but I actually put it in the book. It was a powerful story of a dad and his 14-year-old daughter. His daughter wanted to go to a Friday night football game, and her dad said no. And I remember him calling me and talking me and talking with me, because he was trying to figure out his way through this, because his dad, her dad said no to go to the Friday night football game. And she looked at him and she said, "Dad, I hate you." And she went storming to her bedroom. Now, I want you to put yourself emotionally into that moment as a parent, right? You just, your daughter just tells you, 14 years of age, says, "I hate you," and goes storming to her room. Now, there's a number of different ways that you can posture yourself in this moment. You can punish the negative emotion by, you know, looking at her and saying, "Don't you ever speak to me that way again. You go to your room, I'm taking your phone for a month, and no, you're not going to that Friday night football game. Do you understand me?" And, you know, I mean, if you experience that type of reaction from a parent, what's that going to do? It's going to shut you down. But yet, as parents, that's often our default mode. The other way of doing it is just dismissing it and or minimizing it. Let's minimize it first and being like, "It's just a Friday night football game. Who cares?" Or dismissing it would be like, "Don't be mad at me." The posture of emotional safety that we're talking about is our ability to be able to enter into her world in that moment and say to her, "Honey, what is it about that Friday night football game that matters to you so much?" Now, that requires us as a parent to have our limbic system be calmed down, because if our limbic system, bottom part of our brain, fight, flight, or freeze, if it's going off, and we're yelling back at our daughter, all we're going to do is ratchet both people up, and the entire environment of the home and the atmosphere of the home is just going to ratchet up, and it's going to be chaotic. And so you've got to be able to come to a place where your limbic system is down, where you're taking a breath to enter into your child's world, to posture yourself in a way to get behind the motivation. What is it about that Friday night football game that matters to you so much? What the dad found out about his daughter is that she had been rejected by a group of friends that she hung out with in the previous school year. And this was the first Friday night. And she would see them posting pictures on Instagram and Snapchat and whatever else of them hanging out without her. This was the first Friday night they invited her to be a part of something. And her dad said no. And you see the emotion, the rejection that she's experiencing. If we ignore that, what we do is we build a wall between our heart and our child's hearts, and we want to be able to enter into that. And so that's the space, by the way, that is really powerful. I want to give one more, and we can maybe jump to marriage or kind of jump into whatever you have left.
I just want to like pause on that for just a second, because whatever you just experienced in your own body, listening to that story, once you hear the context and the heart behind like what that child is going through, like, do you see how it just draws your heart toward them? And it's as opposed to this punitive, like, "You will never speak to me that way again." And I'll be honest, that's my default. Like, when I'm not doing well, that's how I react. And we talk about react versus respond, right? Like, that reaction is that fight response, that freeze response, like that thing that just comes out without a filter. Whereas a response is our ability to actually be emotionally mature in that moment and to collect ourselves and to respond to a human, to a human's heart, and to recognize there was something significant going on for that little girl, not even little, that girl, to respond like that. And yet, when you don't know the full story, again, this is I think how most of us are in everyday life. The person that cuts us off on the highway, the person who, like, you know,
we live on the surface. We don't actually get down underneath to really understand what's happening in the inner world of another person, especially our kids or our spouse.
But once you do, like, their behavior makes sense. Like, it totally makes sense. And you form this connection of understanding, like true understanding. And I think that's the power. And I think the perspective that we all would be helped by in relationships if we saw with those eyes and we looked for that intention of understanding.
Yeah. No, I agree wholeheartedly. And there was a one other research study I'll cite real quickly is a guy named Robert Epstein out of Harvard University. And he did a meta-analysis on parenting research. And if you've been a listener of the podcast, you probably heard me state this one before. It's also in our book, Famous at Home. But it's just a powerful research study. They basically did a meta analysis. This is where you take all kinds of data, you combine it into, you know, and you kind of find what was the overall research saying. And basically what they found is they were looking for the top 10 parenting strategies to get the outcomes we most desire in our kids. And the number one one was love and affection. The number one most, and by the way, the parenting experts, they asked parenting experts after they ran the data what they thought the top 10 would be, and they all got it wrong. Which I find hilarious and fascinating. The number one parenting strategy to get the outcomes we most desire in our kids was love and affection. It goes back to the relational warmth component, I think, for faith transmission. Number two, by the way, was a parent's ability to manage his or her own stress. So I'll let that one sit for a second. A parent's ability to manage his or her own stress was the second greatest parenting strategy to get the outcomes we desire in our kids. Number three was how you treat your spouse or how you treat a co-parent in a divorce situation. I would argue that of the top three, none of them have to do with a direct relationship with our child. They have everything to do with who we're becoming as an adult. Because even love and affection requires our ability to experience love. Mm-hmm. The Bible says in 1 John, we love because why? He first loved us. When you go to therapy, the first thing a counselor is asking you about is your parents. What was your relationship like with your parents? Did you feel loved? Our ability to truly love in a way that is completely selfless and not selfish is based on how well we receive love and have received love in our own lives. And so I think those top three really speak into us paying attention to who we're becoming as adults and how safe we are in the context of our environment. Now, granted, we're going to talk about other words. We're going to talk about words that matter for your family. And we're going to get to discipline at some point. We are also going to talk about, you know, and I talk about this in Safe Houses, really that environment of leading in grace and following in truth. That's what emotional safety looks like. Because as John Townsend says, truth without grace will always be received as condemnation. And so often we just hammer down on truth. And I'm not saying truth is not relevant or important. It is. It 100% is. But when you are a parent or even a spouse that leads your home in all truth and no grace, it will be received as condemnation. And this is why we're starting with safety, is because I believe Jesus came full of grace and truth. I believe that every interaction he had, you go through the scriptures and you look at the interactions Jesus had with the woman at the well, to the woman caught in adultery, to Zacchaeus, to Nicodemus, you name it. He always leads in grace. Yeah. He's always leading in grace. That's who he was. He embodied it. I believe that is, you know, even in Psalm 103, look at God the Father. He's abounding in steadfast love. He's slow to anger, right? He will not always shame us or chide. He doesn't treat us as our sins deserve. And I think when you look at that, what you see is exactly what James then is talking about. He says to be quick to listen, to be slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not accomplish God's righteousness. It's James 1:19 and 20. So that's what safety looks like. And I think...
So let's move to marriage.
Yeah, because let's talk about marriage.
Like I think a lot of what does harness, like that parent-child connection, because there is this sense of protection and provision, like that's kind of our role. Like I think we kind of can lean into that maybe a little bit easier, but how do you do that with what's sort of a pure relationship in a marriage and or in friendship even?
Yeah. Well, I think let's go to marriage, because we talk about the household, we're talking about your family. I think for the family and for the relationship of where we're at, you know, I talked about this last week a little bit when we talked about the household, but you know, when you get married, you become one flesh. And the Bible says to guard your heart, it is the wellspring of life. I believe, therefore, what that means is that my role as Christy's husband is that I am to pursue her heart, that I am to guard our marital heart, because out of our marital heart will be the wellspring of life for our kids, our home, our household, the environment of our home. So goes the relationship of our marriage. Mm-hmm. So goes the environment of the home. Everyone around you feels it. Everyone feels it. Our kids know if we're being affectionate or not. They can pick up on whether or not we're being short with one another. They can pick up on all of those things. And I think, therefore, the power and ability to be emotionally safe, you know, when we talked earlier, Christy and I talked earlier about, or when she told our story earlier in the podcast, and just hitting the bottom rung of life, I remember in that season, Christy coming to me and looking at me and saying, "Why don't you ever ask me about what's on my heart?" In tears. And I had no idea what to do with that. So I just hugged her and held her because I didn't have any clue how to answer that, because I was just kind of caught off guard. But after that, we started doing this thing called 15 minutes a day, where we started pursuing each other's hearts by asking about emotion language. And it's so easy to live on the surface in our environment that we live in. It's so easy to live on the surface in the culture that we live in, to talk about the business of the day, where we're taking the kids from here, there, that type of thing, but to never really get into the heart. And I think that building that safety really comes out of our ability to be able to enter in and just ask about emotion. Because what it does is it helps our spouse put left brain language to what it is they're experiencing, right brain, in the here and now. And as a spouse, as a husband, I get to be a part of Christy writing her story by just simply inquiring about her heart.
Mm-hmm. And the power of that, because in that season, like for me, I didn't know how I felt. I remember that day specifically when I said, like, "Why don't you ever ask me about me?" Because I didn't realize until it flung out of my mouth and I was in tears how alone I felt. I felt left behind. I felt like I didn't have anyone that cared about me. I was just caring for people who couldn't tie their shoes. And it was in that process, like verbally, out loud processing, where I realized, like, I wasn't doing well, but it was so confusing. Like, I didn't know how I was. I was just kind of numb. And so what this 15 minutes a day did was we just asked, you know, to use an emotion word as opposed to just the transactional things of the day. You know, people often do like high, low, and that's good. But again, that's only hitting the like things that you did or happened that day. It's not hitting at the heart level. Whereas if you add an emotion word to that. And I remember the day actually Famous at Home came out, the book, I remember checking in with Josh and he said, "I felt brave today." And you see how him using that word, brave, it causes you to like lean in and like peer into his heart. Like, "I see you. Like, I can feel you. I can feel how significant this was." And it's like, "There you are." As opposed to like, "Oh, it was good. Yeah, you know, I felt good about today. It was good." Like that just, it's facade again. It's this image that we're putting out. Whereas when you can connect with an emotion, and we usually say to use one positive and one uncomfortable emotion. So an uncomfortable emotion would be the ones we don't typically like. So anger, sadness, grief, fear. They just don't feel as great, but they all have beautiful purposes. And when we avoid them for a long time, we will feel the effects of them. And they come out sideways. And that's when we start to really get in an unhealthy place. And so to handle them in the moment, day in, day out, like, "I felt rejected today. I felt dismissed today. I felt angry today." Those are all words that connect someone back into your story without you having to pretend anymore. Like, so many of us survive off this image that we've cultivated over years, carefully crafting So we're accepted. And so we do well. And often, like, we do well with it. Like, it gets us promotions. It gets us into social circles. Like, it's what people like. But it's not always true of us. It's this thing we're acting. And so when we're talking about emotional safety, it's the ability to actually be your full self and to share that with someone and to be safe enough to share with someone. And I will add, there are people that are not safe to share that with. In fact, there's far more on that list probably than there are on a safe list. And so I pray that your spouse is safe for you. But if you're in a place right now where maybe that's not super, doesn't feel really safe, to be able to have a friend to do that with, maybe it's a parent, maybe it's a sibling, or just a really close friend. And you'll know you feel safe because you feel heard and you don't feel corrected, condemned, shamed.
Given advice.
Yeah. And advice giving, I think we all sort of can fall into that too, where we're trying to, and that's our inability to feel okay with someone else's uncomfortable emotion. And that is actually a skill you kind of need to learn, is to
just... And that's huge. And it's huge in your marriage too, because when you do 15 minutes a day, one of the big things that we coach couples to do is don't try to fix the other person. Like, especially when that uncomfortable emotion comes out, you don't want to try to fix it. Just allow the person to feel it. And I'll tell you, that in and of itself is a very, very healing thing. When Christy just hears what I'm feeling and I feel validated by what I'm feeling, I don't need her to do anything about it. I just need to know she's in it with me.
But that's the powerful thing, because so many of us, we shut down when someone wants to pour out emotion because we feel like we have to have an answer, a solution, wisdom, advice. Like, we have to be able to fix it. But if you take off that responsibility off your shoulders, like, you are not God. That's not your job. You just get to be with. It's the power of presence to actually be with, to attune, to connect to someone. You can just hear it. And with empathy, like, listen. And but also, I always imagine, like, almost like this bubble between you. So it's like an open heart, soft heart that I can hear you, but with this clear bubble around me that I'm protected. Your negative emotion or whatever you're walking through, it doesn't actually get in to impact me. But I can still be open and empathetic and loving and tender towards you while I'm still preserved. So, because so many of us feel the threat of other people's negative emotions, because it's not, they're not handling it well, honestly. And so it comes at you, it could come with arrows and blame or resentment. But when we can just, like, listen to something that's hard and just respond with openness and love, like, that right there is emotional safety. And it matters not just with our spouse, because I don't know how many times, like, I will feel with the people you love most, like, you just have this innate desire to, like, you know, people say mama bear and, like, you know, all these phrases for, like, this visceral thing that comes over you where you're like, I will protect you at all costs. Like, where is your boss? I will come get him. Or where is that person or that bully at school? But to actually take all of that responsibility of fixing the situation off your shoulders, it allows you to be with people. And that's what you really want.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, it's fascinating when you have this sense of safety. You look at the book of Proverbs 22:6, it says to raise a child in the way they should go, not the way you want them to go, but the way they should go. And when they're old, they won't depart from it. You know, that verse is really about, it's a promise. It's a proverb. It's not a promise. It is not a promise. It is a proverb. So generally speaking, you raise your kids in the way of the Lord. When they're old, they won't depart from it. But that's all about the environment. That verse is all about the environment of our home. Mm-hmm. It's really about, what kind of home are we cultivating?
Yeah.
What are we doing to nurture the household that we're moving forward? And I think that in and of itself, that whole idea of safety, when I sit with Jesus, I'm safe.
Yeah.
And when I sit with him, I am feeling loved. I am feeling connected. And maybe that's not the case for you. Perhaps sitting with Jesus has taken you a long time to do. Perhaps it's uncomfortable to sit alone and quiet and that type of thing. But I just encourage you to press in, even if it's for 10 seconds. even if it's for 30 seconds, just start slow. But to me, that slowing down, the getting out of the rat race, getting out of the chase, as we describe in chapter 2 of Famous at Home, to stop the chase mm-hmm. is what gives you the ability to be a different person, to be present, to not always be turned on, if you will, but to sit with people, that withness. I love my friend Jordan Rayner describes it as unipresence. I'd never heard that phrase before. You know, God is omnipresent. He's everywhere all at once. We're designed to be unipresent, to be present in the moment, for me to be present right now with Christy on this podcast, to be present with you as you listen, and not have my mind wandering about other things or chasing other dreams or all that, but to be genuinely present with you, with her, in this very moment. And that's unipresence. That's safety. That's what it's about. And I just want to encourage you today as we wrap up, two things I want to, before I do this, make sure you didn't have anything else to say about parenting or the marriage part of this. No. I do want to say, I mean, these are words that we're describing over the course of these next number of weeks. We go deeper into this stuff in a lot of ways in the book, Famous at Home. You can check that out. Also, we are in the Christmas season. I want to make mention that the 25 Days of the Christmas Story and Advent Family Experience is available. We would love for you to get that from December 1st. It's 25 days. You can pick any days that you want in there, but it walks through really experiences, fun experiences you can create with your family to connect with your kids over the Christmas holiday, over the Christmas season, to really help them decide or to know what the Christmas story is all about. But the last thing I want to mention is this, and I think it's important to announce and to make known and to get out there. We will put a link in the show notes for this, but we have a program called My Kids EQ that has been in the works for a long time. And we are getting ready to launch a coaching program, an initial ambassador program for parents, for church leaders, for school leaders, if you're interested. But it will be a coaching program that we are launching. You will get the first curriculum, the first part of the curriculum as part of this coaching program. All the information will be in the show notes of this episode, so make sure you go check that out if you're interested. We'll talk more about it next week, but we will dive even more so into emotional intelligence in a biblically based way, and we'll be diving more deeply into what emotional safety looks like and why it is important to raise kids who are both spiritually and emotionally mature in the days ahead. And so we're super excited about that. Please go check that out at the link in the show notes to sign up. And until next week, I think that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Until next week, keep in mind that the greatest red carpet that you will walk is through your front door.
Keep being famous at home. We love you.